I suspect that most of you have heard the old nursery rhyme. Five little monkeys jumping on the bed. One fell off and bonked his head. Mama called the doctor, and the doctor said, "No more monkeys jumping on the bed." It goes on. Four little monkeys jumping on the bed. One fell down and broke his head. Mama called the doctor, and the doctor said, "No more monkeys jumping on the bed." And, of course, the nursery rhyme goes on, and it's repeated with three monkeys jumping on the bed, then two, and then finally one, and they all fall off. All of the little monkeys fell off and got hurt. And it seems as though the monkeys didn't learn from the mistakes that were committed by their fellow monkeys. Well, it was a month or so ago on the monkey theme. Our daughter and son-in-law in Japan visited a tourist spot, a Shinto shrine named Nikko Toshogu. This is a shrine built in the year 1617 by a shogun, a Japanese warlord, the shogun title for a warrior king. The shrine is a tourist site that bears the carving of three wise monkeys. You probably heard about these three wise monkeys in folklore, the three wise monkeys who hear no evil, speak no evil, and see no evil. These three wise monkeys are a traditional symbol in Chinese and Japanese culture. Well, today, as we approach the spring holy days, to help us prepare for the week of unleavened bread, as to prepare for Passover, I'm going to speak about those three wise monkeys as a tool to use biblical admonition to put sin out of our lives. We must learn to evaluate and discern when to hear no evil, to speak no evil, and to see no evil. Of course, the reason we're doing this is in 1 Corinthians 11:28. In 1 Corinthians 11:28, we're instructed very simply as we prepare for Passover, "But let a man examine himself, and so let him eat of that bread and drink of that cup." In preparation for Passover, we look inwards. We look at ourselves to see what we should do. We continue on, same author, in a second letter to the Corinthians in chapter 13 and verse 5. 2 Corinthians in chapter 13, verse 5. Again, they were instructed, and that instruction goes to us today, that says, "Examine yourselves whether you be in the faith. Prove your own selves. Know you not your own selves that Jesus Christ is in you, except you be reprobates?" In other words, understand who you are and yourself. Examine yourself so that you can put the sin out. So today we're going to take a look at some practical ways to do that. It's nice to say, be sinless and go and you and sin no more, then, which is fine, but how do we do that practically? And we're going to look at the three monkeys today as we do that. So the first monkey we're going to look at is the one that says, see no evil. Well, we're probably familiar with the old expression, monkey see, monkey do. Perhaps we've all said it at some point or another. It's like if your parents said, well, you know, if the kid's going to do something stupid, well, if so-and-so jumped off the cliff, would you follow them, you know, or doing something silly? And we come up with the term, monkey see, monkey do. In other words, just because somebody else does something, does that mean we have to feel compelled to do so? And so there is a tendency of people to follow others, whether or not they're doing the right thing. Perhaps there's also another avenue of the see no evil. And as a lad growing up, when I went to the movie theater, they would show little cartoon shorts at the beginning of the theater. And they would always show these little cartoons of Mr. Magoo. And Mr. Magoo could barely see, and he would go along and practically blind, but everything seemed to turn out right. Well, Mr. Magoo was always positive, but he seemed to have a lack of awareness of the world around him. As he moved along, everything would be fine, and just accidentally sort of turned out that way. Is that the way we live our lives, that everything will be fine? We just sort of accidentally hope that everything will turn out fine, that we don't see any evil. Let's take a look at Proverbs 22 in verse 3. Lest we all become like Mr. Magoo, we should take a look at this proverb. After all, that is a cartoon and not particularly realistic. So in Proverbs 22 in verse 3, we read this instruction. "A prudent man foresees evil and hides himself, but the simple passed on and are punished. That's in the King James. Look in the NIV. A prudent man sees danger and takes refuge, but the simple go keep going and suffer for it. Had a fellow called me up, had bad things happening to him, and he said, "Why does this always happen to me?" Oh. And I said, "Well, let's take a look at what the decisions you made coming up to that point. Why do those things always happen to you?" And finally, we came to the point, well, if he would have made other decisions along the way, then those things wouldn't have happened to him. Isn't that the way it is in my life and your life as well? It's those little decisions that we make along the way. So seeing no evil doesn't mean to avoid seeing the evil before us, because a prudent man looks well to his going, wants to look well. Now, just because we're looking at things to look well to our going, and just because we don't want to see things that the evil before us, we don't want to, you know, we don't want to focus on that, doesn't mean, or does mean that we should overlook, we should choose to overlook some things, and then we should choose to look closely at some things. So it's a matter of decisions. Let's take a look at Luke 14. In Luke 14, there's a parable. Luke 14, 28 and verse 29. It's a simple parable, just a couple of verses, or an example, rather, in Luke 14. And this is about counting the cost. When Christ says, "For which of you, intending to build a tower, sits not down first and counts the cost whether you have sufficient to finish it?" In the NIV, suppose one of you wants to build a tower, in other words, something tall, something that everybody can see, not just a little, not a sandcastle, but, you know, just something that's tall that everyone can see. Suppose you want to build a tower. Will he not first sit down and estimate the cost to see if he has enough money to complete it? For if he lays the foundation and is not able to finish it, everyone who sees it will ridicule him, saying, "This fellow began to build and was not able to finish." Ooh, we're looking at foresight here. Choosing to look at the entire picture, to look at it properly. So seeing no evil doesn't mean that we overlook the important things that we must look at. We must count the cost to know what's worth it. As we continue to look on, I'm reminded, and I thought of this just before church, of the comedian of years gone by, Groucho Marx, who said, "Who are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes?" Well, that pretty well narrows it down, I guess. Always did like Groucho. He had a lot of other interesting sayings, too. Not often you can quote Groucho Marx in a sermon, however. But do we see the best in someone else, or do we see the guile in other people? Because seeing no evil means that we look at the best in other people instead of always seeing them at their worst. In the book of John 1:47, John 1:47, we have an example of what Christ saw and how he related that in the book of John in verse 47. And let's back up to verse 45. Philip finds Nathanael and said to him, "We have found him of whom Moses in the law and the prophets did write, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph." And Nathanael said to him, "Can there any good thing come out of Nazareth?" Apparently that was a local expression. Nothing good can come out of Nazareth must have been the expression. Philip says to him, "Come and see." Verse 47, and Jesus saw Nathanael coming to him and said, "Behold, an Israelite indeed, in him there is no guile, in whom there is no guile." Whoa. Can that be said about us? Guile, meaning planning to do something bad, wrong, or thinking of a sneaky way or a crafty way to do it. And yet Christ said, here comes someone in who is no guile. In other words, he was honest. He was forthright. He wondered, you know, aloud, you know, he had that same human expressions that the rest of us do. But Nathanael, Christ looked at him, and he didn't see the evil, despite the remark that he knew, had to have known, that Nathanael made about him. Can anything good come out of Nazareth? And what did Christ look on? Oh, the rat. He's speaking ill of my hometown. No, he said, in him there is no guile. He wasn't deceptive or trying to be crafty or get away with something. And so we have the example of Nathanael. Would that we could all do that. Have Christ say that about us. Because if we take a look in Jude, there's only one book in, or one chapter in Jude, so we look at Jude 1:21. And in Jude verse 21, there is a time. Well, we should be looking at. In Jude 21, keep yourselves in the love of God, looking for the mercy of our Lord Jesus Christ unto eternal life. You see, there's going to come a judgment time, a judgment day, and we're thankful that Jesus Christ will return to be our Savior, and we will look to that mercy of Jesus Christ, something that we can look to. Or do we fear it? Because it's evil? No. Jesus Christ is coming for our betterment, for our salvation. That's why we call him Messiah. So when the first monkey is seeing no evil, we want to be aware of our surroundings, look for the bright side, and sometimes we have to overlook things that need overlooking. Christ has given us the example of to be careful what to say or what to see and how to see it. And then we have the example of hear no evil. And the second monkey, of course, if you see no evil, then hear no evil. There comes a time when we all hear something outrageous about somebody. And we go, whoa, I had no idea. And then on and on it goes. And the poor, whoever was the subject of the talk, is pretty well taken apart by the conversation. And of course, it's quite interesting. Whoa, so-and-so did what? And then they did what? And it can be really delicious to the ears as you drink this stuff up. And so let's take a look at Proverbs 18 in verse 17. And Proverbs 18 in verse 17. Because this helps us to cool off the heat of what we hear that sounds too delicious to the ears. In Proverbs 18, verse 17, the first one to plead his cause seems right until his neighbor comes and examines him. So the first time you hear something, it sounds right, you know. But then what does it say? Until the neighbor, someone else comes and questions it out further and says, you know what? Maybe there's a mitigating circumstance here. Maybe there's something else. There's an old expression in the army that says the first casualty in war is the truth. When there's a war that breaks out, you can be sure that the first things you hear aren't going to be so. And that's just an old expression. Everybody in the army knows that whatever you hear is going to be mangled up by the time. It's like playing telephone when we were kids and you pass it all the way around. Well, sometimes we're not kids anymore. Sometimes we do it by the real telephone. By the time it's all passed around, what we thought we heard to begin with isn't what we heard later. Because if we have a willing ear for that, we are reminded in 2 Timothy 4:4 what happens to a willing ear if it's open to the wrong things. If we take a look in 2 Timothy 4:4, it's kind of scary. Because I like a good story just like the next person does, but we have to be careful with what we hear, what we put into our minds. In 2 Timothy 4:4, and they will turn their ears away from the truth and be turned aside to fables. So if we're not careful, what we listen to may be considered a fable, a story, something false, not really true, something manufactured, something just made up. So we must focus here to keep your ears turn to the truth and not like the others who turn away from the truth. We must keep our ears attuned to the truth. You know, we didn't have television while I was growing up. And my mom's brother went to school and became a TV technician as a young man, and so he felt sorry for the family that had no television. So I was in high school, he brought a television out to the house. And the first thing we saw on the television was that Snowy Fuzz. You know, that those of you that have the old cathode ray tubes know, the old TV, what they call the tube. And so that was the first thing that we saw. And then from that point forward, all it seems like the television was just full of fables. Just amazing, all the things. And still is, to my understanding. Even though we haven't had TV for 10 years, I hear all the stories about it. And I presume as soon as Cyrus goes off to college, we may again see TV. But until then, we haven't, while he was growing up. And but we'd want to be careful that the fables that we hear don't turn us away from the truth. Now, the fables can look a lot like the truth. They can be disguised that way. They can have frosting on it, okay, and look very tempting, but it isn't. That doesn't make it the truth. So you have to be very careful to keep your ears attuned to the truth. Don't bring in things that are questionable that you know that may not be true. Now, we also hear that I read in John 10, verse 27. In John 10, verse 27, we read the words of Christ. That would be John 10, 27. When Christ said, "My sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me." Now, I have sheep, and they don't always listen very well, but there is something that they listen very, very well to. And that is if I take the feed pan and I bang it. And they can hear that from afar. So maybe they don't necessarily listen to my voice. Now, if they're hungry, they'll come if they know I'm around. And then they will let me know. They'll bah, you know, they'll make their voice be known that they have needs, like I did today. I fed them this morning and I'm going to church and they're all standing by the fence wanting more. This is not uncommon for them. But if they're in the far end of the pasture and I want to bring them around, just bang the pan a little bit and they'll come a running. Do we come a running at Christ's voice? Because if my sheep hear my voice, Christ says, I know them and they follow me. Do we follow Christ? Do we follow when he bangs the feed pan that's full of the word of truth? So we must focus in that particular area. It's not just hear no evil. We have to replace that with the truth. Now, I grew up with a dog named Shep. I may have mentioned before. Got her when I was in first grade in country school. She was a six-month-old female border collie. The farm dog family died. Family dog had died that winter, and farm dog, and my brother and I were in country school, and our country school teacher brought a six-month-old dog to school. Well, we don't have a dog. We'll take it home. And we went home with the dog. The parents were rather upset for a while. But because we walked home, it was only a mile, so we could walk home. It wasn't uphill both ways, though, guys. Just when I tell my kids that story, it was 6 miles, you know, waist deep in snow, uphill both ways. And we went home with the dog, but they settled down and had the dog, and it lived until I was a senior in high school. It was my super best friend. And the dog, you know, I grew up in a family of four boys. And now in comparing notes, now that we're over 29 years old and moving on, and we compare notes, we all thought the same thing. We all thought that Shep, the dog, was each one of ours best friend. It just didn't occur to us that it would be somebody else's best friend too, because we all got along famously with this dog. It was a remarkable experience, and she knew our voice. And even when she got old and she couldn't see very well, we could just talk to her. And in the last year or so, she was probably had cataracts and was mostly blind. But she heard our voice and she knew us instinctively. And she was a great cattle dog. When we call, she knew all the signals, never had any formal training, but she knew all the signals, knew what to do, when to do, and how to do it, and all of the details. Just by the inflection of our voice and what we said, she could round them up, line them up, bring them in, move them out. It was really a remarkable opportunity because she knew our voice. And again, do we hear the voice of Jesus Christ? when we read these words. The words jump off at us. So it's not just a matter of not hearing, or as the monkey, hearing no evil. Do we hear the truth? Do we see the truth in our lives as well? And of course, the third monkey is one that's probably one of the hardest monkey pieces of monkey advice, monkey business to follow, as it were, and that is to speak no evil. Let's take a look at Proverbs 16. We'll take a look at Proverbs 16, verses 1 through 3. In Proverbs 16, and verses 1 through 3. To the man belong the plans of the heart, but from the Lord comes the reply of the tongue. All a man's ways seem innocent to him, but motives are weighed by the Lord. Commit to the Lord whatever you do, and your plans will succeed. So it's not just what we say, but what the intent of the heart is behind the words that we say. And that's very difficult sometimes, when our intentions aren't always as good as they should be. We can turn to James to know, to learn more about the speaking no evil in the book of James. Actually, when we read James, when we take a look at chapter 3 in James, we can just read the whole chapter. I mean, it's all speaking about the tongue. We're not going to go through the whole thing today, although we could. But the book of James is all about controlling the tongue, because if this third monkey's advice is to speak no evil, really, it's how do we control our tongue? And let's take a look in James, starting in verse 1. My brethren, let not many of you become teachers, knowing we shall receive a stricter judgment. Ouch. Ouch. For we all stumble in many ways, and if one does not stumble in the word, he's a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body. Indeed, we put bits in horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn their whole body. I don't know if you guys have ridden horses or not. I used to have a horse as a young man, actually several of them. And a stubborn horse didn't want to follow the bit in the mouth. But if you put, you know, and if you just put a halter on them and you tried to ride them, it was entirely up to them if they wanted to follow along. But if you put that bit in the mouth, that it was a convincing agent to pull their head one way and to go in that particular direction. So with a horse, you put a bit in the mouth, and you can direct where their paths or their step. And the mouth, of course, right there, bit to control the tongue or the mouth being in the front of the horse. We put a bit in the horse's mouth that they may obey us, and we turn the whole body. Verse 4, look also at ships. Although they are so large and are driven by fierce winds, they are turned by a very small rudder wherever the pilot desires. Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. You know that the rudder on a ship isn't very big. Those of you that also go canoeing knows a paddle isn't very big compared to the canoe and the people in it. And it doesn't take much to put the paddle in the water as a rudder, as it were, to steer it. And the rudder can make the entire ship, whether it's a canoe or a huge ship, to go. Reading on. See how great a forest a little fire kindles? And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature. And it is set on fire by hell. For every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and creature of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind. But no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. With it, we bless our God and Father, and with it, we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not be so. Does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter from the same opening? Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olives or grapes, or a grapevine bear figs? Thus no spring yields both salt water and fresh. So we must be careful. If we're going to be a freshwater person, we should, follow the other two monkeys' advice. of the hear no evil and see no evil if we're going to speak no evil. That we are going to give forth that which the fresh water that Jesus Christ represents. And then there's another thing that we can look at, because tongues don't always are not always used in a positive sense, and we can and often do others for encouraging purposes. But sometimes, because the tongue is what we use to express ourselves quite often, if we take a look at Psalm 14 in verse 8, if we take a look at Psalm 14 in verse 8, we'll see a little bit about the nature of God and how that's going to relate here. Psalm 14 in verse 8. Correction. Psalm 145, verse 8. Are there 145 psalms? Or did I? Yeah, here we go. 145, not 14. In verse 8. The Lord is gracious and full of compassion, slow to anger and of great mercy. Sometimes our tongues are not slow to express our anger. And I think we all fit into that category. And there's a certain point we get frustrated and we say something that we shouldn't have. But God is gracious, full of compassion, slow to anger, and of great mercy. So how do we train the tongue to be slow to anger, to be slow to respond? Now we can turn to Proverbs 15 in verse 1 and 2. In Proverbs 15, verse 1 and 2. A soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. The tongue of the mouth commends knowledge, but the mouth of the fool gushes folly. I had a neighbor as a kid when I was growing up. He was a very very wise man who did a lot of work in the neighborhood, and everybody worked together on projects. Particularly in harvesting crops. And he was an older man when I knew him. I say he's older because he was the same age as I am now, but he was certainly an old man to me at the time when I was a teenager. I'm thinking the old guy. And he was telling me about when he was a young man working in the neighborhood, and they got into and all the neighbors were there, and they were all working at harvesting, and somebody got after him for something, that whether he had done it wrong or the perception was wrong, and just really, really tore into him, got after him. And he had a decision to make. Was he going to speak back in kind? Was he going to respond in kind? And he said he put his tools down and he walked home. This was in the era before everybody had cars and trucks. He just put his tools or equipment down and he walked home, because he was unwilling to make a bad problem worse. So he left in the middle of that. If we take a look, right, stay in chapter 15, of Proverbs 15, go down to verse 18. We go down to verse 18. A wrathful man stirs up strife, but he that's slow to anger appeases strife. In other words, there's no reason to stir it up. And how do we usually stir it up? It's usually with the tongue. I mean, there's very, very effective ways. Now, you can do it some other ways, too. You can let people know on the freeway exactly what you think of them cutting you off by using a horn, or perhaps mouthing words to them in your vehicle that I see from time to time where people get very excited. And people stir up strife. But let's turn now. We're just to the next chapter in Proverbs 16 and verse 32. In Proverbs 16 and verse 32. He that's slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he that rules his spirit better than he that takes a city. In other words, the true strength is in the ability to control what we say. True strength, more so than the arm or the conquering spirit that will conquer an entire city. So if you want to To live a godly life, you must be slow to anger, control what you say. Reinforcing that God is gracious and merciful, we read in Joel 2 and 13. I mean, it's sprinkled throughout the Bible. In Joel 2, in verse 13, it's one of the minor books of the minor prophets, Hosea, Joel, Amos. They're called minor not because they're small in impact, but because they're short. Their writings are not very long. And in Joel 2:13, and rend your heart and not your garments, and turn unto the Lord your God, for he is gracious and merciful. And then those very important words, slow to anger and of great kindness, and repents him of the evil. In other words, he's willing to turn from doing one thing to do another. God is slow to anger and of great kindness. Now, I'm speaking to myself as well as everyone else, that we must replace that swiftness to anger with great kindness. Not always an easy thing to do. We just read that a soft answer turns away wrath, that it's a sense of touch. It's an allegory of the sense of touch. When you think of soft, you think of something what? Velvet, silk, something like that. Something you really enjoy, velour, you know, something that's warm and fuzzy. So are words warm and fuzzy? You know, are they things that would draw people to us? And so that would then turn away, if a soft word turning away wrath, meaning anger, that would explain the emotional response, because you don't think of, you know, little bunnies and soft, nice, cuddly, fuzzy things in association with things that you would with regard to being angry. You know, saying the right thing is in Proverbs 25:11 is a valuable, valuable commodity. It's very important. Saying the right thing at the right time. You know, in Proverbs 25:11, I always remember to say the right thing after the conversation is over and the other person's taillights are going off into the distance. And then I think of just the perfect thing that I should have said. Alas, it's a bit late for that one. You know, for speakers, there's always three speeches that they always give. The one they plan, the one they actually deliver, and the one that they should have delivered as they thought about it later. Well, a word fitly spoken in Proverbs 25:11 is like apples of gold in pictures of silver. A word fitly spoken, that's the right word at the right time at the right place. Now, that can go wrongly. A word misfitly spoken isn't so valuable as far as the gold and silver. It isn't as valuable. It can cause problems in all kinds. In fact, often does. And that's where the term biting your tongue comes from, I believe. That's just withhold the saying of what you really thought. I know there was many years ago on a television program called Saturday Night Live, Kevin Nealon was the actor who was called Mr. Subliminal. And out loud, he would say whatever he was saying. Hi, nice to meet you. And then under his breath, but still so that you could hear, you know, what a wretch. How come you came here? You know, and then, hello, you know, we're so happy you're here. Why did you come? You know, I'm just the opposite. You know, if you could really hear what people were thinking while they were saying it, that word fitly spoken becomes valuable, particularly if it's without guile. With Nathaniel, what Christ said Nathaniel had. In other words, with purity, with honesty. Now, there is also an example of, in speaking no evil, we have the example of Abraham's servant who went off to get a wife for Isaac. And we read about that in Genesis 24 and verse 21. We read this little gem that's tucked away in there. Abraham's servant had sent him off to get a wife for Isaac, and he was given and said, the young woman who came to the well, who drew water for you and your camels, would be the one. So let's read here as we pick it up right here in Genesis 24, verse 21. And the man, that would be Abraham's servant, wondering at her, remained silent so as to know whether the Lord had made his journey prosperous or not. He waited. He didn't say, oh, what do you think? I got this deal for you. I've got I've got all these presents. I've got these clothes. I've got gold and silver items here. You must be the one. No, he waited silently. My dad had a couple of sayings, and some of you may have heard these before. You may have heard them elsewhere. From time to time, he would mention that so-and-so missed a perfectly good opportunity to keep his mouth shut, which was the nicest way of saying that he shouldn't have said whatever he said. And then there was a neighbor who shall remain nameless. I believe he's deceased now. And everybody always thought he was a bit slow, probably because he was a bit slow. But, I mean, it was widely thought that he was a bit slow. But my dad cautioned me. He said, he's not as dumb as you think he is. In other words, you've got to be careful because he could be crafty there. So don't fall into that trap. Don't fall into the trap just because he's silent. Okay, just don't fall into the trap. In Psalm 32, in verse 2, Psalm 32, verse 2, when we're talking about speaking no evil, the psalmist writes, "Blessed is the man unto whom the Lord imputes not iniquity, and in whose spirit there is no guile." Doesn't that sound like one of the songs we sing? "In whose spirit there is no guile." No craftiness, no second guessing what evil is he up to next, and so forth. We roll a couple of chapters down into forward into Psalm 34 and verse 13. In Psalm 34, verse 13, "Keep your tongue from evil and your lips from speaking guile." This guile thing seems to be pretty important. In other words, a purity of heart, because out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. And so keeping our tongues from evil and the lips from speaking guile. And we just have to recall the example of Nathaniel and say, I want Christ to say that about me. Here he comes, right after you said something particularly awkward. Christ knows that you still had no guile. You were just doing as well as you could. Paul wrote to the Corinthians in 2 Corinthians 12 and verse 16, "I did not burden you, nevertheless, being crafty. I caught you with guile." Ouch. We don't want to get caught with guile, so we have to watch our tongues to be very careful in that regard. The guile theme goes on and on, and it's referred to in Thessalonians, 1 Peter. We find it in John, and we find it in Revelation. Let's take a look in Revelation in chapter 14 and verse 5. In Revelation 14, in verse 5. "And someday we all get called before the throne of God. And we'll be standing there alone." Now we'll have our advocate, our attorney representing us at the attorney's table, as it were, in the courtroom. But we are alone, are the witness that will have to answer the questions. And in Revelation 14 and verse 5, "And in their mouth was found no guile, for they are without fault before the throne of God." Well, can the same be said about us today, or when we come then before the judgment seat of God? So as we look forward to this Passover season and the week of unleavened bread about putting sin out of our lives, we want to put the guile out of our lives. And the way to do that, of course, is to think of those three wise monkeys, the monkeys that will see no evil, the second monkey that would hear no evil, and the third monkey that would speak no evil. So when we do appear before the judgment seat, or before then, as we appear at Passover, we must say, let Christ say, as he said of Nathanael, "In him comes a person in whom there is no guile."